Good morning. Today is our fourth in a six-Sunday series on key passages from Paul's second letter to the Corinthians. Taking up all of chapters 8 and 9, the longest section of this letter consists of Paul's attempt to get the Corinthians to follow up on a financial commitment made a year earlier to aid the church in Jerusalem. He begins by celebrating the extreme generosity of the poorer churches in Macedonia, possibly as a way of shaming the wealthier Christians in Corinth. We will begin with the first verse of chapter 8, which is found on page 222 of the New Testament in our pew Bibles. Let us listen for what the Spirit is saying to us today. We want you to know, brothers and sisters, about the grace of God that has been granted to the churches of Macedonia. For during a severe ordeal of affliction, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For, as I can testify, they voluntarily gave according to their means, and even beyond their means, begging us earnestly for the privilege of sharing in this ministry to the saints. And this, not merely as we expected, they gave themselves first to the Lord, and by the will of God, to us, so that we might urge Titus that, as he had already made a beginning, so he should also complete this generous undertaking among you. Now, as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in utmost eagerness, and in our love for you, so we want you to excel also in this generous undertaking. I do not say this as a command, but I am testing the genuineness of your love against the earnestness of others. For you know the generous act of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. And in this manner, I am giving my advice. It is appropriate for you who began last year, not only to do something, but even to desire to do something. Now, finish doing it, so that your eagerness may be matched by completing it according to your means. For if the eagerness is there, the gift is acceptable, according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. I do not mean that there should be relief for others and pressure on you, but it is a question of a fair balance between your present abundance and their need, so that their abundance may be for your need, in order that there may be a fair balance. As it is written, the one who had much did not have too much, and the one who had little did not have too little. May God add understanding to our hearing of the word.
So there are certain stereotypes about Christians that people outside the church hold. And I think it's helpful to be mindful of them so that we don't fall into them, so that we have the best relationship that we can to people who may look upon us according to those stereotypes, right? It's good for us to know about that. So one stereotype about Christians is that we're all hypocrites. right? We say one thing and we do another thing, or maybe even more specifically, we say something but we do nothing about it. There is that stereotype. And I know once upon a time I was given, you know, here's a response. The church is just full of hypocrites. Well, there's always room for one more. Always gets a laugh in church. Not so much outside of church, right? Because if you say, you understand that, right? You don't want to actually say that to somebody unless you know them really well. But because it would play into this idea that no matter how humble we are, no matter how forgiven we feel, the stereotype of Christians is that somehow we feel like we're just a little better, just a little superior. You know, there is that one. And then, of course, a big one is Christians, the church, especially the pastor, is just after my money. That's the only reason they really want me there. We've got televangelists and some other very public Christians who kind of stir that one up a little bit. You know, the kind of folks who, because they've got that media budget, can't go three sentences without asking for money. There is that one. But we also have to own that sometimes, not all the time by any means, sometimes when we get anxious about ourselves and how we're doing, we fall into that thing where we say, oh, we need more people so we can get their money, right? We do sometimes worry about that. It's possible. Mostly we're careful about that. Mostly we don't like talking about money. And so if we err in a direction, sometimes it's not talking enough about money. We get a little shy about that. We don't want to step on toes. We don't want people to feel guilty. And so we get a little shy about talking about money. Paul does not have that problem. Paul is not shy about much of anything, and he's not shy about money. You heard Michelle read so well those big, long, complicated sentences that he puts out to address to the Corinthians in two chapters worth, the rest of chapter 8 and all of chapter 9, something that he wants them to do with their money. He actually started talking about it back at the end of the first letter, where he proposed a collection that they already apparently knew about, the collection for the saints. He writes to the Romans about this. He writes to the Philippians about this. What he was doing is going around, starting these churches, keeping an eye on these churches, and then inviting them, these Gentile, these Greek churches, to contribute to an offering for the mother church in Jerusalem, which also happens to be a Jewish Christian community. He's making this appeal because there is a severe need there. We believe that there was a famine during this time that may have weakened the church and its members. There are other things going on there that would contribute to their difficulty and their need. But he also wants to bridge a gap between the Greeks up in Greece and so on and the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem. And so he makes this appeal. And he's apparently made it in the first letter and has asked them to take this collection and specifically on the first day of the week to set aside whatever extra you earn. Now, which word there is a little bit tough to figure out? For me is, what does Paul mean by extra, right? Does he mean my diet soda extra? Does he mean my eating out extra? Does he mean my second pair of shoes? And you see where I'm going on this, right? What does he mean by extra? He doesn't say the extra you can. He says the extra you earn. My goodness. So I wonder if that puzzled the Corinthians. Maybe it did, because a year later they haven't given. They haven't fulfilled. They made a pledge. They made a promise, but they haven't fulfilled it. And so he writes back in this second letter, really maybe even a collection of letters, but within that, this appeal, where frankly, he just pulls out all the stops. He takes every arrow out of his quiver and he just shoots them at the Corinthians to try to get them to finish up this commitment that he's already proposed. So first thing he does is he stirs up a little bit of a competition. He talks about the Macedonians up to the north of where they are. The Philippian church is there. He will write them pretty soon. The Thessalonian church is there. He's already written to them. And he says, they've done great. They've done wonderfully. They have contributed to this collection out of their poverty. They've contributed more than we expected. They have exceeded, and they have done so enthusiastically. They've done so not as though they were giving to Paul, but as though they were giving to the Lord. They've just been wonderful. You know how that can feel, you know. Your sister is just so sweet. She has just done so, you know, that boy, that little boy Smith who lives, hey, what a great example he is, you know. You know how that can be. Comparisons can be a little bit of a challenge, and particularly these impoverished Macedonians, because you see, the Corinthians are farther south. If you really look there, they're on this narrow little isthmus. They have two ports. They're a very wealthy city. And we think there's a variety in the Corinthian church, but some of the Corinthians are remarkably wealthy. And so there's not only the potential shame of just comparing one group of people to another group, one sister church to her sibling, but to compare the impoverished Christians to the wealthy and to say, they're doing more. It's a reality in the first century church. But it's also a human reality, one that's even a little bit counterintuitive. But the truth of that day and the truth of this day is that human beings, the more we have, the less we give. Not in terms of raw numbers, right? The more we have, in terms of raw numbers, raw totals, we tend to give more. But as a percentage of what we have, human beings, as we get more, we give less. They've done surveys where they start with an income level of $20,000 a year or less and work their way all the way up to people who make $1 million a year or more. And what they've shown is that every step up, the percentage of charitable giving, the percentage of giving goes down. We have a popular image in our country that it's not so, but over and over, study after study have shown it to be the case. I bring this up every now and then, and I understand it's counterintuitive for some people, so frankly, I check my sources. This time, a couple of sources, right? And they confirm this is still the case. Fox News points out that not only do wealthy people give less as a percentage of income, they tend to give to different things. They tend to give to the arts, and they give to universities, and they tend to give to hospitals, all of which are good things, though Harvard University does not need another dime, thank you very much. All of them are good things. Most of them are deserving things, but all of them are things where you get your name on something. Everything from a plaque to a wing to the whole darn hospital, right? This difference in who we are and how we are with what we have, that, by the way, doesn't just convict those millionaires. I don't know about you, brothers and sisters. It convicts me to think about, as I have more, do I also then match what I have with what I give? That's the challenge that Paul gives to the church at Corinth, using the churches of Macedonia. He then goes on to, frankly, a little sarcasm. Paul is prone to sarcasm. I think there's times when if we aren't reading him with just a little sneer in our voices, we're not getting him quite right. Michelle picked up on that. A little bit of sarcasm is one of the things I like about Paul. He says, as you excel in everything. You know, he said, what do they excel in? He lists some things. He says, as you excel in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in utmost eagerness. You notice there's no doing in there, right? It's all what you say, what you believe, what you feel, not what you do. As you excel in all your speech and all your feelings and all your this and that, and then he softens it a little bit, but maybe, I don't know, as you excel in our utmost love for you. Excel in this gift. Excel in doing something. Add into that. Our translation says this generous undertaking, but the word is grace. Excel in this grace. Excel in this giving that doesn't depend on the merits of the one who's receiving. this grace. Excel in that too, for crying out loud. And then, of course, Paul brings Jesus into it as an example. He was rich, not in finances, of course, but he was rich, yet for your sakes, he became poor. Paul knows a hymn that they chanted in the early church. He will quote it in a little bit. He'll quote it when he writes to the Philippians. For he did not count equality with God as a thing to be clung to, but emptied himself and taking on the form of a slave, gave himself unto death, even death on a cross. When you think about what you have to give, Corinthians, think about what God has given to you, what God has done for you, the generosity of God as personified in Jesus Christ. Now, ordinarily, in a lot of his letters, Paul would then go on to make a lot of different points about Christ. But here with these Corinthians, he's a little bit tired of it. He just goes right back to nagging. He says, you began to do something last year. Finish it. I don't know about you, but if you've been on one end or the other, and I've been on both, if you've been on one end or the other of this kind of discussion where a promise has been made and then not followed through on, isn't that frustrating from both ends, you know? I don't know about you, I have made promises where the problem wasn't that I didn't keep it, the problem was I made it in the first place. I made a promise I couldn't keep. How often in life do we get mad at people for not keeping a promise when really they shouldn't have made it in the first place, you know? It's just frustrating. It's frustrating to be that person who's trying to get the fulfillment. It's frustrating to be the person who is hearing all these different exhortations and encouragement. So, because he's shown his frustration, Paul backs off just a little bit. He says, well, it's a question of being fair and balanced between the extra that you have and their need, right? It's just a matter of that. Some people have too much. Some people have more. Some people don't have as much. It's just a matter of balance. It's a matter of fairness, which could raise issues as well. Is Paul talking about everybody being even? Is Paul talking about everybody having exactly the same amount? If one party has 49% and another party has 51%, do we need to be at 50? Is that what he's talking about? That kind of balance? Everything the same? So possibly to address that, he gives an illustration from Scripture, right? To show what he really means. He refers to the Israelites in the wilderness and the manna from heaven, this special substance that showed up in the dew on the leaves of the plants every morning when the Israelites were out in the wilderness, and they could collect it and they could mold it together to make a bread-like substance. And they could eat from it. It was only good for one day, 2 days on the Sabbath, so they had to collect it every day. And what Exodus says, chapter 16, verse 18, says that, Paul quotes it, those who had much did not have too much. And those who had little did not have too little. Now, I think that's a wonderful principle, right? It's not saying that everybody's going to be the same. It's not saying we're all going to compare, we're all going to get out our change purses, we're all going to counter our way down to every conceivable jot and tittle and dime and penny and make sure that everybody's exactly... No, there will be inequality. Not everybody will have the same amount. Inequality we'll have. Inequity we won't have. We won't have a situation where some people who may have more have too much. And we surely don't want to have a situation where some people who do have less have too little, don't have enough. I think it's a wonderful principle. It's a wonderful formula. Steve Cornwell brought, I had all this conceived before you brought that to the men's breakfast. You understand that. Steve brought an issue to the men's breakfast, read from Acts chapter 2, chapter 4, where it talks about the community in Jerusalem really did. They lived with everything being equal because they all put it into a central and allowed the apostles to distribute it as any had need, right? So we talked about capitalism. We talked about socialism and communism and what it meant to give and so on. And I think really this balances that out. This provides a way of thinking about what it means to be fair in community. At one point, Dean Bugenhagen has a friend named Kirk who's been coming to the breakfast, and Kirk said, here's the deal. In our society, nobody should go through a day without three square meals and a roof. And then Jimmy Kuntz, young and wise as he is, said, yeah, there needs to be a floor. A basic understanding of a floor that nobody goes below that floor, right? The ones who have much don't have too much. The ones who have little don't have too little. It might say something about how we manage our households, how we deal with the fact that some people have different gifts, different abilities, different reservoirs of what they can do. Might be how we deal with things in church where it's just not equal. Some people do more, some people do less, some people give more, some people give less. It's just what happens when we gather together, and there's all kinds of reason for that. Those who had much, those who did much, those who gave much, didn't have, didn't do, didn't give too much. Those who had little, not too little. It's a powerful principle. Brothers and sisters, we live in a world that doesn't share it. You understand that, right? I put this before us a few years ago. It's only more true now. Survey was done of 5,000 Americans, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Conservatives, Liberals, Progressives, whatever they call themselves out there, as to what is a proper distribution of resources in our country. Wide spectrum of people who said, this is what we think it is. Five quintiles, five different divisions, 20% each. The yellow, top 20% of our society. The dark blue, bottom 20%. Orange, red, light blue, upper middle, middle, lower middle, more or less kind of, sort of. And the poll said, here's what we think the distribution of resources is amongst those different groups. And it said, here's what we think it should be. Now, this is a very generous aspiration. People who have a lot, the yellow people, the people who have a lot still have more than their share, but we're not going to begrudge them that. But look how much more dark blue there is. Look how much more light blue there is. There's a little more red. The orange is about the same. It's a very generous aspiration. This is what we think. Conservative, liberal, Republican, independent, Democrat. This is what we think it should be. One bar left. What it is, and I only say this, it was originally done 2013, 6 years old. What I'm going to show you is only more so now. It has gotten more so in the time in between. What it is this. Do we agree that those who have much could be said to have too much? And that those who have little could be said to have too little. We don't have to agree as to what to do about that. We probably don't agree as to what to do about that. But we live in a world where that is a truth. And we mirror a different value. Those who have much, and there will be those who have much, don't have too much. And those who have little, brothers and sisters, for various reasons, there will be those who have little, don't have too little. I think it's a wonderful formula. I think it's challenging. I think it's powerful, though. I'm not going to do all two chapters, but best known verse of this whole big thing. If you've been in church for any amount of time and somebody has shown up and talked about money, they have gotten to this verse in chapter 9. Each of you must give as you have made up your mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion. Do you think Paul means that? I don't, for crying out loud. He's been trying to compulse them the direction he wants them to go for all this time. It's that principle where you say, maybe you've done this too, I know I have, I want you to do what I want you to do, but I want you to want to do what I want you to do. Right? I've got something I want you to do. I definitely want you to do that, but I want you to be happy about it. Right? How you make up your own mind, do whatever you want. Not trying to, Why? You know this one. For God loves a cheerful giver, right? Hilarion in Greek. God loves a hilarious giver. But verse 8, can I go on to verse 8? Because why? God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance. So that by always having blank, you may share abundantly in every good grace, every good work. So by having blank, what's in that blank? By having blank, what do we, by having enough. That's kind of like extra. How do we define extra? Goodness, goodness, goodness. How do we define enough? Right? That's the challenge. That's the challenge, because when we can define enough, we'll find out where our priorities are, what we can do, and what God can do through us. Look, I know that there are people in this room, there are people in this church who are doing all they can. Either because they've been able to marshal the resources that they have and they're really being truly generous, giving an enormous percentage of what they give and are just doing what they can. And if you are one of those people, God bless you. If you feel guilty, stop it, but I'm sorry. And some of us are giving all we can because life circumstances have made it just really tough to do more because of debt or because of things that have happened, health issues, all kinds of issues. I understand that some of us can't do any more than we're doing. And if you're feeling guilty right now, I'm sorry about that, but don't. But here's the thing. Here's what's true of me, and I think this is what's true of most of us. I can do more than I think I can. Not just financially, but including financially. I can do more than I think I can, because God can do more with me than I think I can on my own. So here's the thing. I just want to invite you this week to think about those instances in your life, not just financially, but including financially, where you can probably do more, where God can almost certainly do more with you than you think you can do on your own. And if you choose to do it, don't do it for the church. I don't want to make this like self-serving, right? Find something else and say to yourself, this is an example where I can do more than I think I can, because God is helping me sort that out, discerning what's extra, discerning what's enough. I know it's true in my life. And I know that I'm doing a searching about what that means and what God can do. Maybe you can too.